Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
2 weeks ago, November beans lost $1.81. Last week, it was about 30 cents. And on this four-day week, new crop beans finished down $1.39. How much lower can they go? Today, we'll try to find out on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Purdue Extension Ag economist Chris Hurt. Our panelists today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Have we gone low enough in the soybeans, or are there more dollars to be lost yet? Matt Bennett.
Well, I think it's definitely anybody's guess. But in my opinion, I think that we can still go lower. I see a decent crop coming on in South America. I think that the bean acreage, which has already been determined, I guess, by the surveys, I think it's going to come out and potentially be a decent sized number. My money would say that. So, yeah, I still think there could be some downside. I think with all the uneasiness going on in the marketplace and financials and everything else, there's enough uneasiness. I think we could go on down some more.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois. Ed Dunn is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Ed, your view of the bean market?
Well, I would say that the first part of next week, given that we locked limit down on the oil and the soybeans, look for that downside move to continue. Charts show a correction possible, or a rebound maybe at about 11.02 on November beans. We closed the day at 11.40, so another 30 or 40 cents downside possible there. You might see a rebound back in the $12.50 area, but to go back and visit those highs, you almost got to think we've got to see a weather scare for that to happen.
And Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing?
I would agree pretty close to those numbers that Ed's talking about. It looks to me like if you look at the low to high, the way I draw the lines, we went up about $7.80. 50-cent retracement would be $3.90. We're back off that about $3.50 today, so about 40 to 50 more cents. There should be some support there. But one thing I don't think we are going to do is we're not going to sit. I don't think we're going to have one of these markets that just trades a few cents a day and slowly drifts lower. I think it's still going to continue to be pretty volatile.
Ed, you brought up the chart, so let's go a little bit longer with you. We've got one more week in this month yet to trade. At this point, we're looking at an outside down month for soybeans, and we have a March 31st acreage report due out, and that's on a Monday. Will we finish with an outside down month? We'd have to rally, I think, quite a bit to manage to stay outside and sideways.
Yeah, we're going to stay with that outside month, Todd. The weakness will continue.
Well, the outside down. The outside month is a given at this point.
Right, so. The outside down. We will finish down there. We're going to have a hard down day to start on Monday. And the rebound's not going to be much because, as Matt had mentioned, they're anticipating some pretty big acres on that 31st report. So even a mild rebound is not going to be enough to get us outside of that move you talked about.
Numbers look like this in Chicago for the bean pit. May futures, a high this week of $13.74 and a quarter. They're low at $12.07. May futures finished 67 cents lower at $12.07. And November beans at $11.40 finished down $1.39 from last week. There are farmers calling saying, did I miss it? Is it gone? Is it over? What do I do?
Well, we've been hearing some of that, I'll have to say. I think the big question is, how much further can it go, which you asked to begin with. To me, it all kind of depends here on where the farmer's at, what he's done, how he's approached his marketing. If he's paid attention and done some good marketing, got some puts underneath the market here in the past couple of months, then I think, you know, you just kind of step aside from the market at this point. Don't chase it down necessarily. Give it some time to stabilize, see if we can get a rebound, and approach it that way. If, on the other hand, you haven't done much, you know, I said last night at the meeting that we had, you know, if you had been on the space shuttle for the last 8 months and all of a sudden walked in the elevator after you got back, you'd think you had some pretty good prices here. So don't be afraid to do some catch-up if you think that you need to do some catch-up here.
Ed, your company does a lot with crop insurance. Was there a difference in the way producers handled insuring corn as opposed to soybeans?
There was a difference, Todd. They appeared to not be as concerned in the downside to the corn market. In other words, the CRC product had a $1.50 cap up and down from the February price. They didn't feel like we could get below $4 Dec corn futures or maybe much above $7. But there was a lot of desire to get the revenue assurance on soybeans to protect the $3 up and down, because they felt, yeah, we could see $8, $9 bean futures if the acres are out there, if South America's big as we're talking. And on the opposite side, as volatile as we've been, we burned this thing up this summer. And you take a look at what happened in wheat recently, you want that volatility protection to the upside just the same.
No, and then I'll follow up, and I think I know the answer to this. But so if you've got CRC and corn and your RA on soybeans, is there a difference in the way you finish the marketing process with that? And I assume it's puts to the downside for the CRC on the beans, I guess. I had it backwards. But
the CRC, you would need to either buy, you know, a $4 corn put or a $7 corn call, because you're stopped at 4 and 7. And now's not a bad time to actually look at buying those $7 calls on corn. We talked to some guys today and yesterday about doing that, Todd, and maybe next week's the time. Again, the RA on the soybeans has a limitless move, so you don't need to look at the puts or calls as much if you've got that insurance.
I would agree with that. I've been talking to several of my guys about, hey, if you're going to go CRC on corn, you know, whenever you put the numbers of CRC and RA, you're spending $15-$20 an acre more on the RA. So whenever you look at what your put option potential is on like a $4 put, if you could get those bought at 8 cents, as far as your production goes, I think you can do that cheaper. So I've had several guys that have decided to attack the market that way, and I think it's a good way to go, and I agree with Ed. Most of the guys I talk to are doing the RA on the beans. I think that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of, I think, a $3 swing in the bean market, as Ed alluded to, is a whole lot more acceptable for guys to think about than $1.50 move in the corn market.
Well, doing, but did the RA on,
right,
on the beans, and
right,
unless Ed's doing something under the table,
right,
and he's not.
Hey now.
Well, hey now, all right. So as an elevator operator, Matt, is this week easier on you than
it has been?
Which is tougher, listening to farmers gripe about the price going down and trying to deal with that, or having to deal with the financial end of the elevator and sending so much money to Chicago?
That's a loaded question, I'll say, first of all. But I will tell you that certainly elevators have been breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief. I think that the credit, you know, the financial aspect of this thing has been huge for elevators. Whenever you, you know, you're buying stuff and then it runs up $1.50, you got to hold that hedge. Basis levels have not been that good. It hasn't really given us the ability to maybe move stuff like we want to. Yeah, I would say that this week has been nice for us as far as our margin goes. Now, yeah, guys have been a little bit worried, but I've told them, kind of like Bill saying, I had a lot of guys that started selling corn and beans under these levels at the start of their marketing program. They felt like those were good sales. So on the way back down, I would say it's pretty tough to make the argument that, you know, it's, they're still not able to make money at these levels.
Bill, what's left in the countryside, you think, for old and new, old crop and old corn and soybeans?
Oh, I think there's a lot of both. I think most of it is probably company-owned. I don't know that on the bean side, the farmer owns a lot of the beans. But as you, I was up towards Ottawa this past week, and, I mean, some of the piles are just starting to get uncovered. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of stocks out there to hit the market. I just wanted to kind of follow up on what Matt said. He said that they're going to relax a little bit, and I think that's really a key. I don't think the elevator is going to forget what is that they just went through in the anxiety part of it, and they're going to continue to manage their situation and probably be a little bit quicker to maybe come in and make some sales on basis improvements rather than waiting for that last penny or two.
Are you fearful, Bill, that the basis-only contract will stick around for a long, long time?
I guess I think that it's probably a change that's here to stay. I think in the past, when you looked at financing and how the lender approached the business, I think that, you know, like a 1988 type year is kind of what they used as a gauge, and now it's going to be, you know, 2007, 2008. We're going to judge it based on if we're in that situation, what can our limits be here?
So you think it'll be the lender probably looking at the industry and saying, you know, we really don't want you to have this cash flow problem. You can transfer the risk to the producer. We think that's where it should be.
I don't think it'll be for you. I guess I think you'll see cash bids out there, but I think it may be harder to go out and get cash bids 2 years down the road or, you know, 2009, 2010.
I would agree. I think that it's going to be a case where maybe some of your bigger players might come to the table and say, hey, here's a cash bid. Some of the smaller guys may be not able to be as liberal with their bid, maybe, or the process. But I do think that some of your bigger players will be able to get a cash bid. But I do think the basis only is probably here to stay. I also think, as we've talked to farmers this winter about, you know, getting adept at the options, doing options, I think that that's something we all have to consider, because if we don't, then we're taking, we're just kind of going into the market without a really good risk management tool that we can use that will minimize, our exposure to these wild swings.
I guess the next question then follows up is, how does this change the landscape for the producer? And one of them may be simply that as an elevator operator, you have to hedge a position, I think, so in Illinois. So you're actually hedging and you're taking a lot of risk on. The producer doesn't necessarily have to do that. And you're suggesting that they need to learn to use options to manage that risk when they want to make sales.
Okay. I farm as well.
Right.
And I know that if I would have went ahead and put hedges on, you know, whenever I went to school at the University of Illinois, we talked about hedge your grain in the spring and you know, all is going to be well. I mean, that was a good, one of my professors had told me that, well, you know, I would be $1.50, $1.60 out. And that's a lot of money I got to come up with. So me as a farmer, my operating note may have to be twice what it has been just to be able to carry some sort of hedge like that.
And I think it's a matter of being prepared and taking the right kind of margins and having service fees set up right and that type of thing, which, you know, nobody could have anticipated, I don't believe, $8 rise in soybeans and, you know, the kind of markets that we've seen here.
So a producer would need to have a pretty decent asset in order to get the bank to cash flow him on this, right?
Well, it's the same thing you got, Todd. I mean, if the bank's not willing to back up an ADM or a Cargill or a Bunge because they've extended them to their limits, how can you argue that a 3,000-acre farmer should be extended the same money? I mean, it's all the same risk, whether it's hedged by the farmer or hedged by the elevator. It's all the same risk. So it's almost options only.
And to further what Ed says, back in an elevator that's got a warehouse receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake of argument, I could make the argument that the farmer does have the crop in the field at some point where the elevator just got the contract. But it's still pretty much uncollateralized.
Right.
Well, I thought about this a little bit, and then I have one more before we got to the show, and I have one more place to go with this. So I'm suggesting that the farmer will have to have an asset, probably would need to own land. Does this change the big farmer? I mean, the really big farmer who doesn't own land and is cash renting. Does this put a lot of pressure on him? Does this eliminate him in some form? What does it change the way he works?
We insure some pretty heavy cash renters, Todd. And let me tell you, those are the ones that spent $56 on 85% RA corn and $44 on 85% RA soybeans. They have to spend that kind of money to be able to compete competitively next, or, you know, bid competitively next year on cash rent ground. And to be just as comfortable with being in these markets, because if they don't have as much sold, or even if they do and they face the risk. So the guys with the big cash rents and not a lot of equity, you're right, Todd. They've got to find other ways.
Well, and exactly. And,
but
and,
but you're saying they found another way already with your through
with the insurance,
if, with the crop insurance,
and a put option would be similar to that. That you'd have a fixed cost that you'd be protecting a floor in on the bushels that you don't have on your crop insurance or whatever.
And I would say this year, and I think as we go on out, not every year is going to be maybe as easy on the big farmer as maybe what this year has been. I think it's going to get tougher as we go.
Anything else before we take a break for a couple of minutes, get some weather, and we'll come back and we'll talk with Chris Hurt. Our panelists in studio are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded on March the 20th, a Thursday, a short week at the Chicago Board of Trade. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was not a good week for southern Illinois. 2 to 3 months worth of rain fell in just 2 days in the southern quarter of the state early this week as a low pressure system slowly worked its way eastward. 24-hour rainfall amounts in excess of 6 inches occurred in the southern counties, and many locations received more than 8 inches of rain between Tuesday and Wednesday mornings. Yulin, Illinois, located just west of I-57 in Pulaski County, received more than 13 inches of rain by early afternoon on Wednesday. An observer with the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network near Anna in Union County measured 11.96 inches of rain from this storm, and almost 9 inches of that fell between Tuesday and Wednesday mornings. The rain, as you might expect, has caused widespread flooding in southern Illinois. Temperatures this week generally ran near normal in southern Illinois to about 2 degrees below normal in western and northern Illinois. The last full week of March is going to start out on the cool side with temperatures running below normal through Monday. As high pressure moves off to the east and winds swing into the southwest, we'll see some warming the middle of the week. A frontal system will bisect Illinois the last half of the week, and that will keep it cooler in the northern half of the state, as well as bring a chance for rain the last half of the week. Heavy rain could occur again by Friday as a cold front tries to push through Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week, recorded March the 20th, a Thursday, on a 4-day shortened trading week in Chicago. Here's the way the rest of some of the numbers finished in Chicago. May wheat this week, a top of $12.22, a low at $9.76. That's the new lead, finished at $9.87.5, down 72.5 cents. July 96 lower at $9.86.5. May corn futures 5.67.25 the high, the low at 5.07.25, and a settlement price May new lead option at 5.07.5 down 38 cents. December at 5.21.25 down 32.5. We read the soybeans at the top of the show. Live cattle futures April contract 91.40 for the high, the low at 89.20. April settled up 17.5 cents at 90.67.5. The March feeders at 99.12.5 down 17.5, and April lean hogs finished at 56.32.5, $1.30 lower, with a top of 56.80 and a bottom at $54.40. In studio with us, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. And on the phone line today is Purdue Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Todd.
What did you make of our conversation up front about basis only and the way the marketing could change for producers?
Well, I think there's just no question that with the volatility we've had in these markets, the risk both in taking just the sheer cost of those hedge positions, and the basis risk also is quite large. Elevators just simply cannot take those kind of risk financially. They only have 2 to maybe 3 cents of net return per bushel after they get all their cost out. They can't be taking 20, 30 cents or even more risk on some of these contracts. And I think obviously what we'll see is the grain industry is very good at assessing those risks when the markets calm back down, whenever that may be. And that could well be years before we see that. They'll offer those contracts again. I think also we might look at some of the cash indexes at the Minneapolis Exchange. That hasn't been explored as much as we need to, but I think if this basis behavior, basis predictability is not good, then we may be looking for some alternative exchange in agriculture, or we may be looking for some non-exchange traded product to help cover these costs and transfer them from one person that doesn't want to take them to somebody that does.
Hey, Chris, Bill Mayer, I'd like for you to just comment on some of the changes we've seen in the livestock side of it, particularly the hog side of it, and how that might change the way we see. I mean, I know there's a lot of liquidation going on. We've got a lot fewer players than we had 10 or 15 years ago. How's that going to affect things as we move through the next year or so here?
Well, I think it's a major question that all of the livestock sector has been asking, and it really comes down to in the world we're in at this point, with both such strong foreign demand as economic growth, economic incomes are growing so much, and also as we see a pathway for more and more biofuels, what does this mean for the whole livestock sector? We know there's huge competition with the biofuels, as we look at ethanol, soybean, biodiesel, on the corn side. But now as we think about cellulose 2 to 3 years out, that's really going to be a intensive land-based kind of product in terms of cellulose. That's going to compete extremely heavily with the cattle industry and the dairy industry. So there's a lot of questions, and I think most producers are just trying to hold on in the livestock sector right now as we see some adjustments. But I think the bottom line is that overall we're going to see a time, the next several years, be years where overall there's some decline in these herds, the cattle herd continuing to come down, probably a smaller hog herd around the world, as we see some more favoritism going over to crops and crops for biofuels.
Chris, Ed Dunn here out of Champaign. Staying somewhat on the livestock theme, I took a phone call yesterday from an end user in southern Illinois who said, hey, with this pullback, when should I start thinking about locking in some costs? And it got me to thinking, as I'm answering questions on the other end from the grain farmer, should I panic? Yet you look at it from their angle and what they were prepared for, this is a fantastic break. And so I guess it's kind of a twofold question. If you're an end user, do you use this as a pullback, or do we to use this pullback to cover, or do we wait for more? And so I guess congruently with a farmer, do I hit the panic button today and unload, or do we think that this is kind of a blow-off type of activity and be patient in here?
Well, it's a great question, Ed, and there's just no question that these last couple of weeks have been a tremendous sigh of relief for the hog industry that's in such dire financial shape at this point. Since the 1st of March, we've seen cost of production for the hog producers drop about $5 per hundredweight on a live weight basis. And while that still is a loss situation for them, and we're still expecting a loss for the entire year, instead of looking out to the future and saying, I'm going to go bankrupt in 4 months, now they're projecting on I can get through the year and we'll get some improvement as we go out further. I guess I think anybody that is a buyer on this point, they're going to be looking at this break to add to positions. And again, none of us can predict just where that bottom is at. But I think without question, you're going to be bottom picking. And that tells also the grain farmer that there is real demand under this marketplace. Another thing that we haven't thrown out yet, we do have the most rapid opening of ethanol plants that are going to be coming at the U.S. industry in the next 3 to 6 months this spring and summer. That increasing demand for corn is still out there. And again, we haven't gotten back to talk about the fundamentals yet, but there's going to be another day in this market where fundamentals are certainly going to drive the market, and those still remain very friendly.
Chris, Matt Bennett here. If you're a producer out here and you have had a hard time maybe getting a fall bid or Jan bid on beans and you want to do something, you know, I've got several guys that maybe aren't real keen on an option strategy. What kind of a recommendation do you make to a producer in that situation?
Well, of course, it is very difficult for most of them to look at going on into the futures and options market themselves. You know, we've been saying this is certainly a time that they need to be working with market advisors who have brokerage connections. And when the first thing that some of them have to do is the learning process. The next thing is they have to be sure they take their lender along when they talk to that commodity broker or market advisory service. The alternatives are not particularly good. They can obviously do the futures and options themselves. They can do basis themselves, and there certainly is going to be continue to be a lot of risk on that basis. And then I think bottom line is many of them are just going to sit back and take these enormous risk on themselves. And so we're going to have a whole summer probably of just a lot of shifting of those returns that could be $100 or even $200 an acre of margin risk that those producers are taking this year. It really is not a very happy situation. And I think volatility, again, one of the messages is volatility has its cost. And that volatility is being forced to the producer, both from the marketing side. And as you look at inputs, that fertilizer dealer can't guarantee a price. We'll tell you what it will be if we can get, say, anhydrous as we get out there to May and June. So producer is really being forced to take that risk without a really great opportunity to help him other than doing this risk management himself. Got to get out there and learn how to do it.
Chris, one final question very quickly. What are the fundamentals in this marketplace, and how might they change, do you think?
Well, I think, again, we've kind of reviewed those, but we're super tight on soybeans in the U.S. We're at 1973 levels on soybeans with about a 17-day supply. The difference, we can import some beans if we have to from South America this summer. Big bean acres, if I think a lot of us are thinking there's going to be a big surprise, too many bean acres, and we're going to have to shift some more acres into corn. The corn fundamentals, to me, are heavily driven by ethanol. I don't think we can get enough corn acres to meet all the demands for the corn for the 08-09 marketing year. And what that tells me is we'll return at some point, maybe not to the highs we've seen, but you're going to have bull markets before all is said and done and we get to the 08 harvest.
Chris, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Chris Hurd is Purdue Extension Ag Economist, joins us from West Lafayette, Indiana. Final word from our folks in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett of Windsor Grain.
I think it's going to be a wild and volatile market. The next time you get a big upswing, go ahead and lock in some floors.
Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, don't hit the panic button, folks. The phones are ringing off the hook this week. Don't worry about it. We'll see some better days, and everybody have a happy Easter.
And Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing.
I would just like to follow up on what Chris said. Now is the time to get yourself set up so that you can do puts, so that you can do some other things, not in the middle of June or July when you're in the field.
That is this week's edition of Commodity Week. Thanks for being with us. Be sure you can listen to it online again at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Have a good Easter weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.